MLK Show. I'm super excited. You guys might know my guest today. He is all over the place. He's doing great work at Human Events. He is doing great work at the Post-Millennial. He has an amazing program on college campuses called Common Ground Campus. And he has a book coming out about one of my favorite people who's unfortunately passed away, the great Dr. Zelenko. And he wrote a book with him before he passed away that's about to hit the shelves. And I'm honored to have back Brent Hamacek. How you doing, my friend?
I couldn't be any better. I'm on the Mel Kay Show. I'm winning. And I'm wearing, stand up for a second, I'm wearing my favorite dissident T-shirt in your honor.
Oh, thank you.
So you and I are going to be on a dissident panel together on March 11th down at the Trump Doral for the Zelenko Freedom Foundation gala event. And I'm looking forward to that. And I'm going to have to up my game to be sitting next to you. So this is good practice.
Oh, you stop it.
Rounds here, this preseason. I'm going to get ready.
Yeah. You're very humble. You actually are bring a lot to the table. Your Human Events is doing amazing. You also are Post-Millennial. The work that you guys are doing is top notch and really, really opening eyes. And I wanted to jump first to a lot of people didn't know that there was that Dr. Zelenko was working on a book. His life is amazing. He did so much for this country. I believe that he's still up there fighting every single day alongside God to try to save this planet and our lives and our health and our freedom. But talk a little bit about how you met Dr. Zelenko and the journey and the book a bit.
Sure. So all roads in my life seem to run through my dear friend, Tamara Lee, who I do a show with on Rumble still. And Tamara seems to know everybody. And it was back in December of 2020, when Zev was kicked off of Twitter. His claim to fame is that he was kicked off of Twitter before Trump. He was very proud of that. And so Tamara tracked him down and we did a show with him. And from that show developed a friendship. I wound up doing an extensive interview piece with him for Human Events right afterwards that we posted in January of 2021. And we remained friends and we stayed in touch and we used to talk regularly and we didn't talk about the pandemic. We talked about philosophy and theology and other things. We had fun conversations. I tell people he stretched me intellectually in every direction. And ultimately that led to the idea in sometime in late August of last year after an all-night texting session together that maybe he should write a book. And then he asked me to write it with him. And look, serious side, you say I'm humble. Well, nothing makes me more humble than the fact that there's probably 100,000 people in the country that would have liked to have written a book with him. And I got to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm still kind of wandering around wondering why. But, you know, the experience in working with him was life-altering. You can't encounter that man and come away the same as what you were before you met him. He has a profound effect on you, and he had a profound effect on me. And I say to people that the single biggest thing it does to meet Zev is that it makes it impossible to look in the mirror and lie to yourself about who and what you are. He gives you the gift of pure, candid honesty. And so that was my personal gift and takeaway from the experience.
Yeah, he's amazing. He was on my show many times, and
he loved you.
We connected a lot though, because you know I'm a big my biggest inspiration has always been Hannah Arendt and her unique take on a lot of things. I don't agree with everything, but I agreed with a lot. And we would talk sometimes about the Bible, and when he was on my show, we talked about the same stuff, but he was such a deep, intense man. People don't know he's pretty young, and he had a family and a big life. And all that time that he was fighting the government and fighting for us and fighting for truth and fighting for his patients and fighting the censorship, he was fighting cancer on a really large scale. And, you know, it's crazy. I saw him shortly before he died, and I remember thinking, well, he's probably not going to show up. And he did. And I'm thinking, this is so important to him. But it must have been profound, because I remember he said to me the last time I talked to him, he said he wasn't scared of death at all, that he knew what his mission was and it wasn't the end for him anyway. And that he felt like he was put in the position he was put in and that whatever would be, and he meant it. How was that for you? Because that you were writing his book and while he when it came back full force near the end.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, the book itself, let me just share with your audience briefly the structure of the book. So the book's written in three sections. The first section is designed to let people get to know Zev as a person. And so he had already written an autobiography up through basically the end of 2018 that he wrote after he got his initial cancer diagnosis. And he wrote it in great detail. And he did it for it was sort of like journaling his life so that when Dad passed away, they'd be able to look back and know who he was. So what we did, we knew the autobiography really had already been written. So we gave people a glimpse of his life up to the time of the pandemic so they could get a sense really of key moments. You know, we talked about inflection points in his life and we focused on those. And then what we did is we spent a chapter taking people through his journey with cancer. So Zev is the only person I've ever met who not only felt that having cancer was a gift from God, but that it was given to him on purpose so that he could do the work that he found himself doing in the pandemic. He liked to refer to the line from Band of Brothers where the one platoon member looks at the others when they're asking him about the risks that he takes. And he said, "You guys don't get it. We're already dead." Okay. And so Zev said he had nothing to fear. He was already terminally ill and the cancer was a gift. So we take people through the journey of the cancer, in which, by the way, the last part of that chapter talks about the treatment that was upcoming, that was his final treatment, that ultimately where his life ended with very, very new, risky, but hopefully effective treatment. And then what we do is we have a chapter that shares his philosophy. And he was a philosopher. There's no question about it. A grade A, top-notch, legitimate philosopher. And then the second section of the book, we call it the COVID storm. And it takes people through the entire journey from December of 2019, all the way through basically the vaccine and his feelings about it and his ultimate rebellion against it. He was an early advocate and supporter. Readers will be interesting to learn. He wanted or interested to learn that he was going to volunteer to be an experimental recipient of it. Initially, but he came around and changed his mind, obviously. So we take people through the COVID storm. And then the final section of the book is, Zev was known for three things: treating the virus, arguing that it was man-made, and arguing against taking the vaccine. So the third section of the book is called Making the Case. And we make the case that this was an engineered virus. We make the case that this virus was always treatable. And we make the case that the vaccine's a poor choice. So that's the book you'll get. It's awesome. A real read. It's 331 pages. So lots there. And hopefully people will buy it. If I could add one more thing, the book is available now. It's available for sale on Amazon. And
it is? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Great. It's up. It's for sale. It's already hit number one in one medical category, and we haven't even had the promotion of it aggressively yet. So we're on the Mel Kay Show. So everything, life starts today, right?
And we'll put the link. And I got to say, side note, and this is not because of anything other, but I have to tell you, I have changed my whole health and medical regimen. Because the minute I start to feel like I'm getting sick in any way, you know, it's cold, I'm getting a normal cold, I start popping my Zelenko medication, my Z-Stax, and it's gone in a day or two. These are really, the work that he did and left behind is really amazing. And we have our whole family. If I, my niece got sick, I'm like, does she have Z-Stax? My sister's like, yeah, she's taking it already. And I know people that take it every day just to, you know, because it's winter and they're in New York City. And so it's really, he's made a big difference, and he left behind also a legacy of health products that really are superior. I know he was on my show talking about the fight getting stuff through the FDA, and that you know, as a doctor, he had really gone through the whole realm as a medical doctor of like, you know, why aren't they using natural products and what's this about? And that's a huge revelation that he on my show kind of told the people about is that, you know, this is not about health. This is not about your immune system. This is not about what's best for the patient. This is about money and corruption. And so his product, the Z-Stack, is really amazing, and I love it, and I use it all the time. So every time, I swear, I can even think I might get a cold.
Right. Well, I can one up you on this. The only thing in the world I can one up Mel K on. So I take it every day. It's just a regular thing I take. And since I started on his regimen, which before there was Z-Stack, it was just quercetin, vitamin C, vitamin D, and zinc, right? And so since I started on that, I've had 5 colds that have started. And we all know when we're getting a cold.
Right.
Everybody knows. So I've had 5 colds that have started. All 5 died in the crib.
Me too.
None of them developed. So because what I would do is each time I felt it, I would increase my dosage and basically go from once a day to 3 times a day. And I've had 5 colds that never developed, and I'm 60 years old. I know I look like I'm 80, but I'm only 60, folks, honest. And so I'm 60 years old, and I've never had that happen in my life. And I've had it happen 5 times in 18 months. You tell me, is it?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing too.
Or not. Right.
That's what I'm doing too. And he's a partner of ours. He's on our partners page and people love him. I know people keep ordering, and it's really because I think the proof is out there and people are talking to each other. Even people that didn't know who he was are like, what's that? What are you taking? Because the same thing's happened to me. It dies as soon as I have any kind of, because you can feel it in your nose and you kind of dragging.
Yep.
2 days, good to go. And I, you know, that is a fact. So he left a lot behind, not just his legacy and his philosophy and his spirit that everyone can be inspired by, but he also left behind great products and ideas for getting healthy and having your immune system be very strong. And speaking of being very strong, you are doing something that else, you do a lot. You really do a lot for this country and for you know, all of us. One thing that you do is, I think, one of the most important things that can possibly be done out there, and that is Common Ground Campus. This is something that you came up with a mutual friend of ours, Felisa, who's awesome, and we're going to have a show about just Common Ground Campus upcoming. But I wanted to talk to people about what this is and how it can change the dynamics of what's going on. Because I just heard last week they're getting rid of the LSAT. You know, now the MCAT is racist, and then K-12, they're implementing the UNESCO World Climate Education into all disciplines. You know, we got them sending now, I think the Obama Education Administration folk are sending 60,000 counselors into schools to deal with social emotional learning. And we're pumping kids out into colleges that are not equipped to learn or aren't communicating. And yet at the same time, they're dividing them by race and class and sexuality and all of that. And once you get to these college campuses now, unlike when we were younger, and going to college was a free thinking, I think I was on the last rung of that, but where the whole point of college was to interact with people that didn't think the same as you, that forced you to think different, that you used your critical thinking, you used different skills. Well, that is kind of being erased, but you came up with a plan to get people talking again, because I believe, I'm going to do a lot of changing on my show, because I've changed a lot over the last 18 months I've been on the road. And I firmly believe like the whole left and right paradigm, Republican Democrat paradigm, or even the gender stuff or the race stuff, it's all to divide and conquer. We really have to all bring everyone under the tent and get together unified in the message of, you know, we are American. We love this country. We're going to make this country everything it can be. And you're not going to divide us anymore. Common Ground Campus is a good place to start. Please tell me a little bit in my audience about Common Ground Campus and how you came up with it and how it's going.
It's a wonderful program. We just did an event at the University of Houston last week. It was a big success. The Leadership Institute got behind us. We're now a program of theirs, and Turning Point USA is supporting us. We are on the road the week after Thanksgiving to Ohio, to Medina, Ohio, where we're going to help Turning Point USA launch its high school program.
And
so we're going to be at Medina High School. And so that's a big deal. We have multiple colleges lined up for the spring. The Zelenko Freedom Foundation has gotten behind the program to support it as part of its mission. So this is a wonderful thing. Fun side note on Zev, when we did the first event at the University of Georgia back in April, right away, very early the next morning, he texted me and said, how did it go? He wanted to know how the program had gone. And he was a big supporter of what it was we were trying to do. He loved the concept. So look, and I give my partner, Felissa Blajek, all the credit for this, because it was an idea that was in my head for years, and I didn't do anything with it. It was just sort of a dead idea. And I think, you know, I say that I had the idea in my head for 9 years, and I shared it with her one day, and 9 months later, we're at the University of Georgia campus, right? So
she's quite a force. When she wants to do something, she'll do it.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. When she's focused, best to stay out of her way. I've learned that. So Common Ground Campus is a program that instead of the typical debate format that everybody's used to on a college campus, where two sides walk in hating each other, they have people up on stage who hate each other, they argue for an hour, and then they all go out in the student commons and get in a fight. Instead of that, what we're doing is we're taking an issue that students say to us is divisive on their campus, and we're saying, all right, find us a couple of students on each side of that issue, and we're going to sit down for an hour in front of a live audience. And we are going to not debate the issue. It's not a debate. We are going to force each of you to say, where are you coming from? What do you think the problem is? And then the other side, they got to ask questions. Why does this matter to you? What do you think we should do? What do you think we should do? And so, and it's moderated. I'm the moderator until we can find somebody under the age of 80 to do it, right? And so my job as the moderator is just to keep them inside the lines and keep them focused and listen to what they're saying and see if along the way, we can't discover, well, maybe they're not as far apart as they think they are. And so we look to find, as it's named, Common Ground. And we film these programs so that they're archived. The University of Houston footage will pop up on the Common Ground campus website soon. And so there's a permanent memorial of it. And then we eat pizza afterwards. And the pizza party was Felissa's idea, too. I mean, she's really sort of the brains of the outfit. I just work here. And but it's gone very well, and it's been very well received. The people that participate, the students that participate in it, are overwhelmed with the experience. They love it. They're like super grateful. Thank you for coming to our campus and letting us do this. And the audience is really impressed with what they've seen. And they basically say, look, I've never seen anything like this. This should be on every campus in the country. This is, you know, it's something that's really needed. So we're about to halt and catch fire with this. There's just a ton of interest. We're super, super grateful, but it's not an accident. It's required a lot of work and really sort of Felissa's vision for it.
Yeah, well, again, Mr. Humble, but
I had an idea for a long time I didn't do anything with. If you sit on an idea and you don't do anything, you really don't get to take a whole lot of credit for when it pops. I will say this, last thought on it, though. And I use this example. I'm not sure if Felissa likes this example or not, but I say that we're really like farmers, right? So we talk about what's going on in the country. And if we want to affect change, we're not going to do it in the short term. I think people saw that with the election a few weeks ago.
Right.
But with young people, that they have something I don't have. They have a future. And so what we're doing is we're sowing seeds. And we're showing people what it is like at a young age to engage openly and positively with people in front of them, face to face, confronted with them as human beings, and actually listen to where they're coming from. And we don't know what those seeds will grow into. It doesn't mean there will be, you know, 1,000 students doing Common Ground campus events 20 years from now. What we're hoping is the seeds grow into something that reflects critical thinking, tolerance, thought, acceptance, engagement, right? And trying to solve problems instead of just eating red meat.
Yeah. You know, what I've noticed lately with the advent of this Twitter evolution and how many people on that were so pro censorship and shutting down the other side truly believe that, you know, all the rhetoric that one side's evil and the other side's good and the good side's evil. And I'm just so sick of it. I've said for a very long time, I'm not an advocate of the, I believe that there's a uniparty. I believe that there is a force that is bigger than our government that wants us all fighting and divided, and that we've been infiltrated. I brought up many times the Bezmenov interview or the Marxism communism that's kind of, you know, seeped into our culture, and the people suffering the most are the college students, in my opinion. There's nothing good about segregation or hatred or shutting down free speech on a college campus, and at the same time dumbing down the curriculum, dumbing down the students. You know, I see teachers getting fired because now their classes are too hard. So somehow, so there's something wrong with them. You know, Mark Crispin Miller out there was a professor of teaching propaganda at the journalism school where I went, NYU, and he got so attacked for questioning two sides of an argument because one side was offensive to one student, and it set off a firestorm. And this is happening all over. Right. Here's my question for you: is this entitlement? Like you're not allowed to speak here. You're not allowed to say what you want to say. You're not allowed to do that, because I don't think people are truly offended or, you know, they don't need safe spaces. This is all crazy talk. What is the real, like, I just saw Ann Coulter went to speak. I believe she went to Cornell and she couldn't speak because she was shouted down, and they were saying that her speech was violent. Nobody with a rational mind believes that her speech was violent, you know, or define violence. I think a lot of this has to do with the mentality that's become normalized on Twitter, especially, and the, you know, one word quips and hiding behind a computer, which is why, because it's in person. But what do you think's happened here that students have become so, you know, they're closed-minded and they're angry and they really, truly seem to believe that the other side doesn't deserve to speak.
Right. So, well, it's a great question. And it's a bigger question than students. By the way, speaking of Anne at Cornell, back in 2006, Anne was at Loyola University here in Chicago. I actually hosted Anne for dinner after that event. She was shouted off the stage that night. This isn't new, this sort of intolerance on campus. We saw it on campuses in the 60s, of course, too.
Right.
But it's bigger than that, because it's been growing. Social media is a contributor. There's no question. I mean, I've written and spoken about that. But it's bigger than that. So here's what I believe. I believe that we have lived in a culture now that, in large part because of social media and what you're able to get away with without consequence, it's road rage behind a screen, right? Right. You're at 60 miles an hour on the highway and you flip somebody off, that if you were standing toe to toe with them, you wouldn't say a word because you know they'd hit you. Well, you can do whatever you want when you're insulated behind a computer screen. So what's happening here? I think what's happening is that we have a society that has condoned and legitimized hatred. So this comes back to, you know, the bottom of my email. If any of your guests write me a note, I'll always write them back. I write everybody back. And if I do, you'll see at the bottom of my email, it says, P.S. Hobbes was right. It should also say, P.S.S. Freud was righter. Our nature as people, it isn't good. And we fight to constrain it. We're taught socially to constrain it. We know that if we go around harming people all the time, things won't go well for us. Some of us are taught through our religion to behave better. There's all sorts of things at work to constrain us from being who and what we are naturally, which isn't very good. And a lot of those constraints have disappeared. And so on a college campus, when you're allowed to hate, when you're allowed to shout down a speaker and chase them from the podium, then you hate and you chase them from the podium. You're allowed to do it on social media. You could make an argument. The transgender movement has a component of hatred to it, because boys know they're boys and girls know they're girls. But if you're a girl and you say you're a boy, and if society says, and if anybody disagrees with you, they're wrong, well, then you get to hate them if they disagree with you. So we're tapping into, in modern America, some of our base level instincts that feel very, very primitive. They don't look primitive because they're in high definition and we're holding them in our hand, looking at images and,
right.
you know, and we're well-dressed and we're well-traveled and doesn't look primitive. It's pretty primitive and we're unleashed.
Yeah. And it's really very sad. It's funny. You brought that up. And I think a lot of this comes from what I'm about to say. You brought up when you were in college in the 60s, the Weatherman Underground.
Wait. I wasn't in college in the 60s. Oh, my goodness.
70s.
No. 80s. That's okay. I know it's easy to look and you say, God, he had to be in college.
No. I didn't say that right. What I meant was you said in colleges in the 60s, not right. when you were in college in the 60s. But you said in colleges in the 60s when the first wave of anti-American, you know, kind of manipulation came through. Then we had more when you were there, which is the 80s, there was the Saul Alinsky, Weatherman Underground, kind of this. A lot of these professors, a lot of this does seem to trace to University of Chicago, oddly enough, or Columbia. There's certain schools where I feel like this, I saw this early on. But do we think that, because a lot of these people are also connected, the people that I think really foment a lot of this seem to be very connected to the Obama regime and to that whole group of people, that same mentality. It feels very much like the entitled rich class that made up the Weatherman Underground are, again, the people that are really at the top of this chain, this food chain of hatred and control and shutting people down and hate is a very similar class of people. It seems like there's a manipulation going on and people are feeding into something that is not organic, that is not coming from even inside them, that people are being externally manipulated. And, you know, I see these kids, these 26, 24 year old kids that'll debate me about how the Communist Manifesto is the best way forward for America, or that Saul Alinsky was right. And you know, and well, what Media Matters and David Brock do is necessary, or, you know, what's going to happen to democracy. You know, it just seems like people are being on a mass scale also manipulated and brainwashed and they don't even know it. Do you think that's a part of it?
Well, sure, it's part of it. I mean, you bring up wonderful large topics. I think in that brilliant short speech you just gave, we could probably do 5 hours of broadcasting, right, to really pull that apart. Here's what I believe. I believe that Marx was absolutely right about the dialectical move of history. And I think that he was absolutely right about where a mature capitalist society heads. I think looking at the United States today, it's hard to argue with that. The problem is Marx had human nature wrong. He thought that the further away we got from private property, the better our souls would become and the more our true selves would show, and that we were basically wonderful creatures corrupted by private property. Here's what we're finding. We're moving in a collectivist state. We have been for over 100 years in this country. Only we're not so nice. So what happens if you get collectivism with a bad human nature is you get despotism. You know, Marx knew there had to be a revolution and some violence on the way to utopia. What he didn't really realize is that we'd get stuck in that part, right? People kind of like that. Right. And so today where we are is, yeah, of course the leaders manipulate this for their purpose. And I do believe in that notion sort of a uniparty in general. I mean, it's a ruling class, as Angelo Codevilla would have called it, did call it.
Yeah.
But humans have been trying to, small groups of humans have been trying to dominate large groups of humans and have been doing it successfully for all of our history. Our founding fathers tried to build a system to prevent that as best they could. But it's been over 200 years and the architecture is starting to fall apart. So, you know, the people that are at the helm today, the folks within the Obama group, yeah, they're at the helm today and they'll die and there'll be new people that'll replace them. There's a movement that's taking place. And the biggest thing I think for your show viewers to understand is that in order to stop this, we literally have to break the dialectic. We have to break the trajectory, the motion. It's not enough just to try to alter it. We've got to shatter it. And that's a really difficult thing to do. And that's a long game. It requires a full-blown societal reset. It's why being a dissident, like you and I are going to talk about in Miami in a few months, it's why it's so important, right? I mean, what happened? Poland today isn't Poland in 1985. Why? Because back in the 1970s and before, slowly and surely, they started a movement, and Lech Walesa catapulted that movement and others. And ultimately, they broke the system, and they were able to reset it completely. Doesn't mean Poland's utopia. It just means it's not Poland in 1985. So what we need to understand is that this is a very long game, that there's a lot of work to do. We got here over a long period, not from any one single event, but from a whole series of different events that ran parallel to one another. Mel, the way I describe it is a lot of different things happened in this country over the last 120 years that were sort of unrelated to one another. I mean, Teddy Roosevelt's executive authority presidency wasn't related to the establishment of the Federal Reserve, wasn't related to the Frankfurt School and the academics. And but none of those things were related. But here's what they did. They were all running like wires in your home from different rooms along a collectivist centralized path. And ultimately, what do wires do in your home? They converge at a junction box. So what we've seen now is the near full development of a fascist socialist model, or as Darth Vader might say, excuse me, a fully operational Death Star. And that's where we sit in this moment, and that's what we're fighting against. And, you know, God love the folks in the rebellion. They were able to blow up the Death Star. That's what we got to try to do. It's going to take a while.
Yeah, I agree. I've been saying to a lot of people, because, you know, I started, you know this, but my audience knows this, obviously. I started out kind of thinking a lot of things, but I've kept an open mind, and I've had on many different people from all different walks of life. I do a big conglomerate every couple of weeks with a group of people where I am the only conservative in the group. It's mostly anarchists and libertarians and Hollywood liberal and all kinds of people. And we're all in it together. And I'm thinking, because I do a lot of things on the road. I'm lucky I'm going to go to this upcoming Turning Point event. I'm very excited. I do speak at all of General Flynn and the Reawakening Tour and Health and Freedom. And, you know, I go around with Ann a lot. And I've talked to hundreds and hundreds, probably, you know, thousands of people in the last 18 months. And I've changed a lot. I really have changed so much. And I suggest people get out there and start talking to people, because something amazing happens. If you talk to people and have an open mind, you realize we have way more in common than people think. And that's why I'm really going to work on changing the trajectory and everything I've been for the last 8 months of my show. But I want to do kind of follow your lead with Common Ground Campus, because I don't announce who I am. We go, and we're big. We like to sit, you know, and talk to people wherever we go. I always ask at the desk, like, what's the local, like, place where the actual people that live, you know, in this town in New Mexico that I've never heard of go, you know? And when I talk to people, and, you know, you realize after you wipe away all of the nonsense and the manipulation and the idea that you have to pick a team or pick a side or whatever, and you just start talking about life, you realize that a lot of people, before you don't even ask about that, kind of just want the same thing. You know, they really just want things to be stable, or borders, you know, our culture, our history, or, you know, their kids to grow up better than they did, to have food on the table, money in the bank, a good looking future, you know, mm-hmm. whatever it is. But at the end of the day, I think most people really aren't involved in the, this has been an awakening, because you and I saw each other at a political event in Chicago, and mm-hmm. we went around and we tried to help a lot of different candidates we believed in. And I kept seeing that it was both sides of the parties didn't want new people. And right. But it was the new people that gave it hope. And so what I'm saying is, I feel like we have to open the tent to the middle ground. And because I think there's a lot of Republicans that don't feel like they fit in, a lot of Democrats that don't feel like they fit in, a lot of people that maybe called themselves either of those things can't even define what it means. It's like that Carol Quigley back in the day. I talk about him on the show sometimes. I know you know who he is. He said that the two parties shouldn't be so different, that one change of power changes the entire country, like, fundamentally from the inside out. That most people, you know, if working properly, are kind of want the same thing. So going forward from here, I think that the best thing for everyone to do is to kind of, you know, reset and start giving people a chance, and don't just, you know, your life's going to be so much better if you don't pick a side, if you go inside and meet everyone as an individual. And I think that's really one of the big things that's missing.
Right. So here's the real problem. I mean, it really is something. And now we'll sort of tie it all together with the book. And, you know, Zev was a big proponent of what we call critical thinking, and a big proponent of skepticism. So if you ask the average person, you say, do you want to be free? I suspect more than 9 out of 10 people would say yes. And probably throughout most of history, at least 7 out of 10 people would say yes. Not everybody would say yes, by the way, but most people would say yes. You'd get a majority of people saying, yeah, I want to be free. So why is it then that human beings have spent most of human history not being free? Most people have lived unfree. And why is it that in a country designed to allow people to be free, the only country with deliberate architecture that would designed to have people be free, why would they destroy that? Well, the answer is kind of simple. They don't know any better. Mm-hmm. And there's a vast number of people out there that vote for things every year, make choices in their local community. It's not just about elections. People have to get past this election thing. So much bigger than that.
Right.
They make choices in their lives that are against freedom. And yet they would say, I'm for freedom. What's the problem? They're not thinking, and they're not skeptical, and they don't look at the actions of others in question, and they don't look at their own actions or what's in front of them, and they don't think. Common Ground, by the way, is all about trying to get people to think. You got to listen to the other side. You got to consider what it is they're saying, right? And put that together and say, well, gosh, what do I do about that? I hadn't thought about that before. Our event at the University of Houston last week, when it comes out on video, your audience will want to watch it, because you will see in real time students coming up with different ideas about student loans, debt forgiveness, college funding that they hadn't thought of.
Right.
And throwing it out to the other side, and they're all talking about it, stuff they had not really thought about before they went on stage. So this is possible. And that's why we're Felicia and I are farmers.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I have to tell you, that's funny, because one of the things that I've learned over this journey is it's better, especially when I'm at home in New York City and I'm sitting next to somebody I know is a diehard Democrat, all a Democrat, believe, like, watches CNN around the clock, reads the New York Times, yet we're still friends. You know, he sometimes says, I saw your show, and I'm like, oh, really? Well, you know, what did you learn? But but I've learned something, is that you don't know what you don't know. And a lot of those people that I look at and I think, how do you think that? And I realize that they're in the system. This is what they did. This happens to be somebody who's like gone through the Ivy League. That, you know, of course, the New York Times and the CNN are telling me the truth. And, you know, there's no reason to question that. But, you know, da, 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 or, you know, Trump's evil. And I'm not even going there. But what I've noticed is that as time's gone on and people are being affected by what is happening around us, be it financially or, you know, the border or the war or whatever it is, people are more interested in learning, I think. And I try to approach it as always asking questions that I think will make them use their critical thinking when they're not even used to using their critical thinking at this point. And then the conversation opens up. And I'll tell you, you're probably seeing this in your own life, but certainly in Common Ground campus, there is such like a joy and a relief to sitting next to somebody that you think is your opposite. And for them at the same time, it's kind of like a connection, like you're saying, probably happens on stage. And you kind of look at each other, well, we can agree on that. And that's right. Happening more and more in my life as I've started to be like, you know, don't approach it with like, you're wrong, I'm right. Approach it with, well, did you think of this? Like, I really want to know what you have to say, and then really listen. And you end up being like, oh, well, I guess we kind of agree. And there's a beauty to that.
Right. So what people have to do, exactly what you're doing is the right thing to do. Exactly what you're seeing is what we're starting to see in places. But what people have to avoid is what I call the Tootsie Pop problem. So back when I was young in college in the 60s, back when I was young, there was this great commercial on TV. People can find it on YouTube, by the way. So it was this little animated character, and he was saying, how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop? you know, because it had candy on the outside and chocolate on the inside. So one, two, and then he'd bite it and say, and then he'd say three, right? So he licked twice and then he bit and he said, there, it takes three. This is the problem we have to avoid. We have to understand that we don't get to bite through this and finish it quickly. It's well over 100 years in the making. It's been happening at an accelerating rate, this path towards losing individual liberty and our lack of civility, all those things. It's been on the downward slide a long time, but it's accelerating. So we have to slow it down, pull it back, stop it, and then reverse it. This doesn't happen in one or two conversations, but you have to have one or two, and then three, and then four, and you have to be relentless. And you have to understand that just because you did a great job in your family room today, the world isn't going to change tomorrow. So go be a farmer, like, you know, go be farmers like Phyllis and I, and sow seeds and work with young people, work with your friends who are willing, and get people to think critically, get them to be skeptics. Everything takes care of itself if people think critically and become skeptical.
That's true, isn't it? Okay, Brent, this is the first of multiple shows we'll be doing because we're going to actually do a whole show on Common Ground Campus upcoming. So, and we're going to be doing the Zelenko event. So that's going to be really fun too.
I mean, Jess, real nice for you. I promise. I'm going to look really, I don't want to embarrass you on stage, Mel.
Right, you're right. Oh, yeah, you always look terrific. I'll tell you that much. Now, what, let's tell everyone, okay, where can they find the book, first and foremost? Because it's a great book. I really think everyone needs to know about this man way more than they do.
You can go to zevbook.com and click through to Amazon, or you can go direct to Amazon, buy it there. And here's what I want to tell your audience. Just a couple things. Number one, buy a copy for yourself, buy a copy for your friends, but buy a copy for your local library. Great idea from our publisher, Stephanie Perucci, who made this book come to life. Buy a copy for your local library so that everyone can read it, and your local library won't get it otherwise. So buy a copy for the library too. Here's the most important thing you need to know. Every dime that gets spent on Amazon, you know, Amazon gets paid for selling a book. But every single dime of profit will go to the Zelenko Freedom Foundation. None to me, none to whoever, right? All goes to the Zelenko Freedom Foundation, where Ann Vandersteel and Kevin Jenkins are doing a beautiful job of running. The last thing that Zev did in his life was to set up this foundation, to pick them to be the co-chair people of that foundation. So long as they're around, every dime from this book will go to support their work.
Yeah, I'm so blessed that like all three of you are some of the people I love the most in the world, and you're doing this amazing Zelenko Foundation, and it is just the people that are involved here are to me the salt of the earth. So I am so excited to be also a part of it myself. And yes, then where now can people out there, how can they get involved in Common Ground events? Can they Common Ground Campus events, can they also, can they reach out to bring it to their campuses or their high schools or colleges?
You bet. And our website is popping.
Great.
So you go to commongroundcampus.com and there's a little short, easy form to fill out. And we reach out to you within minutes. Let me put it to you this way. We had a school that reached out to us in the middle of the night last night. lo and behold, I was sleeping. Funny how that works. But the minute I woke up, before I even had my contacts in, I responded back, and we have a meeting set up with a young lady tomorrow from a school in Oklahoma. So we'll reply right away. So commongroundcampus.com, fill out the form, off we go.
Great. And how can people find you? Human Events or Postmillennial? Or where's the best place?
Humanevents.com. I'm there. Brent@humanevents.com. If you want to write me a note, I write back to everybody. Or you can find me down the street at the local LA Fitness, you know, most every day of the week. But anyway, that's where you can find me.
Well, thank you so much. We also have to have a show. We need to come up with our 12-step program for humanity on how to treat each other, too.
I think that we could definitely do that. That'd be a little bit of fun. As a recovery guy, I'd love that.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, my friend. I'll see you soon. And I'm very excited about the book and holding, you know, keeping his legacy going. He was an amazing man, and he picked the right guy. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thanks. Pleasure to be here, Mel.
Thanks. Hi guys, Mel Kay here. I'm very excited to be here with my partners at My Daily Choice because we are super excited about our CBD line. It keeps growing. I am a big fan of these patriots that are out there. They are producing this in America. They ship it from America. It is totally pure. It is the best I've found. After the last 2 years, guys, of the medical industrial complex and us watching this unfold, we have to realize that natural remedies, things that come from God, are actually the best medicine. What are you guys finding out there from people that respond to you, and from how you're using it and what it's doing for your life?
Well, it's changed our lives in a lot of ways. For her, sleep is one thing, mood, overall general health, just so many things. But the reason that works that way is because we all have an endocannabinoid system, which none of us were taught. No. I wasn't taught it in grad school. And it's there to give us homeostasis or balance in our bodies. It controls the other 10 body systems. Wow. So no wonder none of us felt too good, you know? So we hear all kinds of stories every day about what it's doing for people.
Yeah, and for me especially, it's great for me for sleep, but also for mood, for kind of staying even keel with energy all day without the ups and downs. And I know I also have had many experiences with different products that you have. The coffee is great. There's a makeup line. I mean, this is an amazing product, and I really want everyone to go check it out. You can go to the partners page at the Mel Kay Show, and you can see the link to My Daily Choice. And we are very excited to get our health back, to go into this next phase of the awakening, and have some great products to use while we're getting on our A game to go back into the summer. So thank you so much, guys. And I will see you next time. And everyone, please go check out the Mel Kay Show at Partners and find the My Daily Choice tab and go check out all the products. There's so many products, you won't even believe it. I really appreciate it. I'll see you guys next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hello, Patriot Pals. I am here again to talk to you about something that's concerning me, and it might be concerning you. This is something all of us are starting to feel on the front lines, which is the controlled demolition of the US dollar and our economy. Right now, if you go to the supermarket or you go fill up your car or just your day-to-day expenses, we are seeing an average of $6,000 in bigger costs across the board for each American family at this point. Our 401ks and our pensions are being decimated, and there seems to be no end in sight, at least not right now, because we are at an 8% inflation rate, and that does not seem to be the end of it. And that is a 40-year high. So we've never really seen anything like this in our lifetimes. What we've seen in 2021 and 2022 with the Federal Reserve and the printing of cash is an influx where 40% of the US dollars out there have been printed in the last 2 years, devaluing our dollar dramatically. The rest of the world right now is strongly considering returning back to the gold standard and leaving the reserve currency of the US dollar behind. This has been a result of the sanctions in Russia and other sanctions by our government on foreign countries that no longer trust the US dollar. And I think the best thing we can do is know that we have to weather the storm. We have a financial storm brewing. We are going to get through it. America will prevail. But in the meantime, I really am suggesting, as I am doing myself, to protect your savings, protect your 401ks and IRAs. And the great way to do that for me is gold and silver. I've been working with Beverly Hills Precious Metals for a little over 2 years. They've been really great with me and my family and friends. They have experts in different fields and different avenues. And if you go to our partners page and you go to Beverly Hills Precious Metals, you will find a real person who knows exactly what can be done to help you in whatever circumstance you're in, wherever you find yourself. They will meet you there. They will help you come up with a plan. You can have your gold and silver delivered to you. They also have a depository that's insured that you can have your gold and silver there for you. And in the end, I do believe that America will succeed and we will rise again. And this country will return to the greatness and the beauty that we know and love. But in the meantime, we have a storm ahead. It's very uncertain. To learn more, please go to the Mel Kay Show Partners page and find Beverly Hills Precious Metals and contact the experts there to find the best path for you and your family to protect your savings and to prepare for whatever's ahead. God bless you. God bless America. And please take care of your family first.
Hey, Patriot Pals. Rob Reilly here. One of the most important things Mel and I do in this war between good and evil is traveling the country, meeting fellow patriots like yourselves. We share stories, resources, gain new tools, make new friends, and get activated to take back our freedom for God and country. Go to themelkayshow.com, events, and come join us. You will have an amazing experience and be reinvigorated to stand for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. As always, God wins. See you there.